All right, if you have your Bibles, I invite you, turn over to the book of Luke, chapter 19. We're looking at verses 1 through 10 this morning, a story about a man named Zacchaeus. There's a ton going on in this little section of Scripture, but I wanted to start by sharing something that really resonated with me this week. I was at a class on Tuesday at Love a Child that Ron Whitney teaches, and he pulled out Costco magazine. I didn't even know there was a Costco magazine. He asked me, have you ever read this? And I'm thinking, I don't know. I think I have better things to do than read Costco magazine. But there was an article written by a person named Brené Brown. Are you familiar with Brené Brown? Some of you are familiar with her. Great author, psychologist, just an inspirational speaker. But she said something in the article that resonated with me and helped shape what I want to explore this morning in this story of Zacchaeus. And this is what she said. After 15 years of research in her career dealing with people, she says this, listen, we are physically, emotionally, socially, spiritually hardwired for connection. And in the absence of connection, there is always suffering. Just absolutely profound. Immediately, it reconnected me to Genesis. One of the earliest accounts in Genesis chapter 2 is that when God looked at the human that he created, one of the first things he said was, this is not good that man be alone. Humans need connection. It's in our DNA. We are hardwired, what she said in the article, we're hardwired to connect not only with God, but with others and with ourselves. And then later on in the Genesis account, we see that what happens when humanity begins to disconnect away from God and from others and self, there's two things that I think happened in Genesis 3 that kind of are the overarching theme. We have broken relationship and broken communication in Genesis 3. Broken relationship with God, others, and self, and then broken communication with God, others, and self. And so God came down into that brokenness to do something about that lack of connection. We see God coming down to connect with humanity. Because in the absence of connection, there is always suffering. Can any of you identify, right? It's like when there's a lack of connection with people, even ourselves, there's something inside of us that says, this isn't right. It's because you're hardwired to connect. You're hardwired to share your life with other people, to be in community, to grow and flourish together. So with that in mind, let's read Luke chapter 19, verses 1 through 10. I believe that this is a story about a person who is experiencing deep suffering. And as we're going to walk through this, you're going to see, how did we arrive at some of those conclusions? What do you mean this is a story about suffering? I think it's a story about suffering. And I'll hopefully be able to pull out some hints and clues for us to discover what's going on in the text. But this is Luke 19, verses 1 through 10. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he couldn't see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Jesus said to him, today, salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. This is the word of the Lord. Now, to set the tone here as to why I think Zacchaeus is having and experiencing deep suffering because of a lack of connection is because of the background. Now, during this time in history, Rome is in power. And anytime you have an empire that is in power, the one desire of an empire is world domination, right? We're going to dominate the world. Power and control and conquer. Their motto was Roma Aeterna, which meant Rome, the eternal city of the eternal God. This is the propaganda that's getting pushed out into society. And whenever Rome conquered a city, one of the first things that they would do is demand that the people of that city paid taxes, right? Some of you know what taxes are. We're well aware of paying taxes, some of the best time of the year. Paying taxes showed your allegiance to Rome, that you're now a citizen of Rome, and as a citizen of Rome, you had to pay a tax. It was a way of showing, hey, we're in the game with whatever Rome is about. Now, in order to avoid these taxes, what people did in the communities is they took things down underground in the black market so that they could buy and trade and sell. Everything goes underground. Roman officials were not aware, well enough aware, of what happened within these structures to know who was buying and trading underground. So what Rome did is they would hire people within the system to work for them. So they would go to these communities and say, listen, and they would always be able to find certain people who were willing to sell out their own people for money, because you can find that in any system. And they would go and they would say, here's the deal. We're going to hire you to work for us, for Rome. You're going to be a tax collector, and all we want is our cut, but you are free to take a little bit for yourself. So when you take money for Rome, we just want our cut. Whatever you take for yourself is up to you. We'll turn our back, and you'll have our support. Our military support will be behind you. So do whatever you see fit. Now, as you can understand and arrive at a conclusion, that would be a great temptation for somebody who maybe is greedy or wants more for themselves. So what does the text tell us in verse 2? There's the clue. It tells us in verse 2 that Zacchaeus not only was a chief tax collector, which put him at the top, but he was also very wealthy. So what is Zacchaeus doing? He's taking a lot for himself. Now, if you're stealing money from your own people, that puts you in a really bad position. All kinds of betrayal going on, suspicion, a lack of trust. Keep that guy out. He can't be trusted. Now, within Judaism, the Jewish tradition, the Torah was everything. This is the first five books of the Old Testament. So Torah was everything. So you had the Torah, but you also had the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is what is referred to as the oral traditions. These are some of the earliest works of rabbinic Judaism. And the oral Torah was all the stuff around the Torah, things that were said, how we interpret the laws and the rules and regulations of God. So oral Torah was, in a sense, canonized just like the first five books of the Old Testament. They were on equal ground. So what was said and all the dialogue by the rabbinical community around Torah was just as sacred. So whatever the rabbis said, they believed as truth, this undergirding truth. Now, the Mishnah states this about tax collectors. Are you ready for this? This is interesting. Tax collectors, according to the Mishnah, are so loathsome that they shouldn't even be considered people. You are free to lie to a tax collector, because lying to an animal is not a sin. Wow. Now, based on their own traditions, their own interpretations, their own conclusions, it was okay to treat a tax collector as somebody other than, less than human. In fact, on the same level as an animal. Now, when there is a lack of connection, there is always suffering. There's always suffering. My conclusion in this is that I believe Zacchaeus, at some level, whether he was aware or not, was experiencing a deep level of a lack of connection and suffering. And Jesus moved towards that to deal with the emotional hurt and the pain going on at a very deep level. Now, let's look at some more hints and clues in the text. We're going to explore a little bit this morning, okay? So come along for the ride. There's going to be some exploration going on as we walk through this story together. Now, Jesus, it states here that Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. He has a desire to see Jesus. And in verse 3, we are told that Zacchaeus is running ahead of the crowd because he wants to see Jesus. Now, we can conclude that he's running ahead of the crowd because he's short. The text does tell us that he's a little guy. But also, if you're in the position that Zacchaeus is in and you're seen as just an animal, somebody that you can lie to, then for him to navigate through the crowd may not be a wise move for a short guy. There, a few elbows might find their way into the face of Zacchaeus as he's navigating through. Oh, I didn't see you there, little guy. Sorry about that. But he's running ahead. And so the picture that's given is still this kind of this separation between Zacchaeus and the crowd, his community. So the picture I think Luke is giving us, again, is separateness. He's running ahead. And then he climbs a tree. So again, he's away from his people, not in front, but up here, separate. He's running ahead. He climbs up into a sycamore tree because he wants to see Jesus. He has a deep desire to see Jesus. Now, how Jesus addresses Zacchaeus is really interesting, and it's key to understanding how Jesus addresses human suffering, especially at all levels of suffering, not just physical suffering, but also the social, emotional, and psychological levels of human suffering. Look at verses 5 and 6. He says, Zacchaeus. Jesus arrives, looks up, sees Zacchaeus, and says his name, Zacchaeus, come down here immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Now, what's interesting about the Bible is that the Bible tends to leave out a lot of information if you haven't noticed. Like in between verses 6 and 8, there's like all this missing information. It just leaves all these questions, like what in the heck happened in this interaction? But the ones that we are given, I want to explore those, because notice the first thing that Jesus does. He looks up and he sees him, and then what does he do? Calls him by name. Now that should be a hint. Like all the lights on your dashboard should be going off right now. Ding, 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 ding. He calls him by name. It is very rare in the Gospels for them to call people by name. You have stories in the scriptures where Jesus is dealing with people, dealing with physical ailments or emotional pain. And very often those stories leave out the name of the person. It's the woman at the well, right? It's the man by the pool of Bethesda, the woman who was bleeding for 12 years, a paralytic, a man with a shriveled hand. Those are just some examples, no names. Jesus calls this man by name. There's something going on here. When you call someone by name, there is, in my opinion, there's a desire to connect with that person. So Jesus wants to connect with Zacchaeus. He's going after Zacchaeus's heart. And what Jesus does, as I watch him interacting with people, is he always has a desire to connect with the human heart. I want to get to the deep stuff. So he calls him by name, because he understands that when there is no connection, there is always suffering. And he addresses the suffering that was broken all the way back in Genesis when we have broken relationship, broken communication. I believe Zacchaeus was experiencing deep suffering, and the compassion in Jesus moved him to bring healing to that suffering. Zacchaeus, you come down. Come down here. I am going to stay at your house today. I simply must stay at your house. I'm coming to dwell with you. This is an emphatic command. It's like Jesus isn't waiting for an invitation. He invites himself. You're like, how rude. You're inviting yourself over to my place. And the text tells us that Zacchaeus welcomes him gladly. The ESV translation says, joyfully. He welcomes him joyfully. So how do you hear that emphatic command? Sometimes some people may hear it like this. Zacchaeus, get down here. I'm coming to your house today. We've got stuff we need to work on and deal with. Now, if an authority figure comes to me and addresses it like that, I'm not coming down anytime quick, and I'm not coming down joyfully. Oh, you want to work me over? There's no condemnation there. There's only invitation. He brings him down, wants to dwell with him and connect with him. You see, sometimes the image of God that we have constructed in our minds is that God is this temperamental image, that we're not quite sure how God is going to behave. So we had better make sure that we have all of our ducks in a row and keep everything in order just in case he's having a bad day. And our ideas and our images of God shape how we live and move and connect in the world. He hears this invitation to come down, and he receives him joyfully. This reminded me of a story. When I was 16 years old, I was at my youth pastor's house. We were having an all-nighter, bunch of guys over there with our youth pastor. His name was Gary Perry. How's that for a name? Gary Perry. Good, Mom. So Gary Perry was the kind of guy that was completely outside of the box. He didn't even know a box existed. He just kind of lived outside of the box, walked through the streets of Royal Oak, where I grew up, outside of Detroit, Michigan. What's up, Detroit? There we go. He was walking around. He was always looking for people on the outside and bringing them into the youth group, bringing those kids that no one else wanted to deal with. So this one night, we're having a sleepover party. It's about midnight, and Gary gets a phone call, which happens a lot as youth pastors. And he gets this phone call that this kid, his name is Chad, had climbed up on top of the cross of the local Presbyterian church in Royal Oak and was going to jump off. Like, what is going on? So he piles us all in the van. We drive down there. Of course, the news is there. Police officers are there. His dad was one of the government officials in Royal Oak, so he was kind of a big shot. And this kid was up on top of this cross. And when I arrived, I saw his dad yelling at him to come down. Get down here, Chad. This is ridiculous. You're acting like a fool. Come on down. And Chad's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm staying up. He was angry, obviously. So they come to Gary, and they ask Gary, Gary, would you try to talk some sense into this kid? He's like, okay. So he goes over. I kid you not. He says, Chad, if you come down, I'll buy you a hamburger, and we'll talk. You know what Chad did? Came right down. Seriously. I'm not exaggerating the story. Us pastors tend to exaggerate the story once in a while. This is not one of those times. It's a true story. He comes down because Gary threw out an invitation. It was the way in which he said it. Come on down, and let's work this out. I'm here to listen to you. See, Gary had a reputation for being a listener. And this kid, Chad, just needed someone to hear him. So he comes down. They go, they have a burger together, and they begin the work of what's going on inside of you, Chad. What's up, dude? Talk to me. What's happening? And he spent years working with this young man through his pain and through his hurt. Called him by name, invited him, hey, Chad, come on down. I'll buy you a hamburger. Zacchaeus, come down. I gotta stay at your house. Jesus is drawing huge crowds of people, enormous crowds wherever he goes. And he calls out Zacchaeus, the one guy in the community that no one wanted to connect with, that's who he's gonna call? He calls Zacchaeus. Now, we don't have any information in between verses 6 and 8, but when you stayed at someone's house in this context, it wasn't just some chit-chat. It wasn't just a quick in and out and then boom, I'm gone. It wasn't like 15 minutes, coffee, thank you, see you later. It was, I'm staying with you. The length of the amount of time doesn't really matter. All we know is that whatever happened in this moment, it changed Zacchaeus for the better. Something moved him forward. So what Jesus does is he starts by calling him by name, but then also notice that Jesus is the one who makes the first move here. See, when a person is covered in guilt and shame, or they've done all this stuff to themselves that it's like, I'm not worthy of God's love any longer because of all the things that I've done, and he's covered in all this shame and all this guilt, and he's tried to do everything to destroy his own life. You're not going to make the first move because you're not worthy. All those feelings inside, that story that you keep telling yourself, I can't connect with God any longer. And God comes to him in human form and says, actually, I'm coming to your house. I'm inviting you to interact with me. And what he receives is no condemnation, but he receives invitation. That's when you know you're dealing with God in the flesh. when there's no condemnation, but there's invitation, the invitation back to life. He's calling him to reconnect back to life, to reconnect with who he really is. And he's going after the heart. So he makes the first move, which is a characteristic of God. If we think about all the things that we've been exploring over the last several months, you remember when we talked about Luke 15? And in Luke 15, there's three stories. The story about the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost sons. There's two sons that are both lost. And what did we discover about the characteristic of the Father? He always goes first. He goes after the lost. So it's the lostness, it's the leastness, it's the weakest, it's the poorest, it's the ones who are pushed out. Those are the ones that we see God going after, pursuing the heart to bring them back in. So when you're at the end of your rope, or you find yourself in a position where you feel weak, lost, least, might I say that you are probably in a good place? Because you're ready, possibly ready, to open yourself up to receive the heart of grace, and that Jesus speaks into that human suffering and says, let's do something about what's going on inside of you, and let's deal with the hurt and the pain. And he works at the heart, human suffering. Now notice the response of the crowd. Notice the response of the crowd. Luke 19, verse 7. There's quite a contrast. The crowd begins to mutter. Now the word mutter means kind of disgrace. They're like just totally, they can't believe that Jesus is going to go to this person's house. There's all of this connected to this idea of like that, you're going to go over to that guy's house, all this disdain against this particular person. And in it says in verse 7, he has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. They don't even address him by name. No name here. They just identify him as a sinner. All this anger, resentment, betrayal. We won't even give him a name. See, in the eyes of the community, in the eyes of the community, he is anything but pure and innocent. And what's ironic is that the name Zacchaeus actually means pure and innocent. He's anything but pure and innocent. But Jesus says, listen, Zacchaeus, pure and innocent one, the community sees you as anything but that. In fact, they see you as an animal, but I see you as pure and innocent because that's truly who you are. And he begins to call out the real person. This is who you are. I'm going after who you really are. I'm not interested in dealing with your ego any longer. He goes after the real, true heart of the person and reminds us, you are not what you do. You're not a tax collector. You're not even what others say about you, an animal. You don't have to be those things. In fact, I'm inviting you to be your true self. That's when you know that Jesus is coming to your house. He's inviting you to be who you really are, pure and innocent. They see you as a sinner. They have defined you this way and have given you a label. But I'm inviting you to something else. I see you as pure and innocent. Are you that way now? No, but you're becoming that way. And I'm going to begin declaring that and calling you into who you really are. And so he begins to feel the pull forward instead of the push from behind. God is pulling him forward, inviting him back to life. You want your life back? I'm going to give you your life back. You're going to reconnect with your life. Zacchaeus needs help to see the things that he's not able to see, because when shame and guilt and all this condemnation is over you, you begin to wear it and you can't see anything else beyond that. That's what you see. And you begin to believe that that's your story and that's who you are. But Jesus comes, removes that veil, and says, let me reveal to you who you really are. I know you screwed up. I know you put yourself in this position. I know that you've made bad choices and you've tried to destroy yourself and that you're cut off. But I'm here to remind you that you're not cut off. I'm coming to your house today. I simply must stay with you because we've got work to do. And he begins to change the story of who Zacchaeus is. Instead of, I'm not, and I'll never, and all the things that you're not, Jesus says, I want to remind you of who you are and what you are. Instead of, I can't participate, you know, when you can't participate and you're not invited to the parties and you hear all the stuff going on and you're disconnected, my friends, there's always suffering, isn't there? When you're not invited or you can't participate, there's always suffering. And I hear so many stories of person after person after person who feel disconnected from life. Disconnected from themselves, disconnected from other people, and disconnected from God. Way too many stories. And you think about it. We've got Facebook. We've got Instagram. We've got this little thing we carry around in our pocket. It's like, you know, you can put 10,000 songs on that ridiculous thing. I got 10,000 songs in my pocket. Like if I would have said that 20 years ago, they'd think, what is wrong with you? Yeah, 10,000 songs right here at my disposal. I can tune in to so many different things. We're supposedly super connected. They call it the connected highway that we're living and dwelling on. And yet at the same time, we are so alienated and disconnected from each other more than ever. We've got all this technology that supposedly keeps us connected, and yet more and more and more I hear the stories of people who say, I'm disconnected. You know what, my friends? We are hardwired for connection. That's how we're made. We're made to connect. So to say that I need you or I need other people is not weakness. That's strength. We need each other. And the world and the systems of the world are doing everything they can to disconnect us, to pull us apart, because that's when suffering happens. And darkness, and Jesus comes and he speaks into that suffering. He begins to address the human at the human level. Here's what you need to do in order to connect with who you really are. Instead of all that deep suffering, I want to connect you to life. And let me just say this. If you are experiencing that kind of pain where you feel disconnected from your own life and disconnected in your relationships, in your marriage, whatever it may be, would you please talk with me? I want to speak with you. I want to help you connect to your life. I want to give you the how-to. And if I can't help you, I know other people that can, that are an absolute gift to the body of Christ. So yes, I believe God heals us at a physical level. I've seen it with my own eyes. But I also believe that God heals at a psychological, emotional, and social level as well. And that stuff is difficult to see. And unless you have somebody from the outside that can help you process that stuff, you're kind of left to your own devices. And many times we can't really see the things that we're caught in. All that stuff that we're unaware of, it's just no way to live. Our DNA is designed to connect, and we desperately need that. And when there's disconnection, especially when there's disconnection in relationships, relationships suffer, and you suffer. And things are not right. Jesus entered into the story. He brought that third perspective. I mean, you think about how many marriages would benefit by having somebody coming in, a therapist or a counselor or someone who's a professional, to just simply help you reconnect with your spouse. It's a joy to share life with another person. It's an absolute joy. And somewhere along the way, as life continues on and we get busy and distracted and kids and all the stuff, we disconnect from the ones that we said yes to in the first place. How many marriages would benefit by going in and saying, you know what? We need help. My wife and I have been to therapy many, many, many times. I remember sitting in the lobby of our therapist, and then you would see the one couple come out before you go in, and there's always this kind of like, yes, we're screwed up too. I'm so glad that you're here. It's like, and especially as a pastor, you sit there, and you think, they're going to know I'm a pastor and that I'm an absolute joke. Yeah. It's great. You're screwed up too? Yeah. I need help. Somewhere along the line, I've missed the plot. And I'm disconnected, and I want to connect in this relationship. It takes great courage and strength to open yourself up, to admit, I can't see it. I'm weak. I need to connect. Take that in, because it's a gift. Now, I want you to look at what
Jesus says to Zacchaeus in verse 9, this is really interesting. He says, today, salvation has come to your house. Now, that's a total play on words. It's really cool because Jesus in Hebrew is Yeshua, and Yeshua in Hebrew means salvation. So, hey, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house today. And then just a few verses later, he says, salvation has come to your house today, in case you have forgotten. Salvation, me, I've come to your house today. It's like, whoa, 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 what in the heck are you saying? What did Zacchaeus need saving from? Suffering. What's going on in Zacchaeus' life that needed to be brought back into order? He's suffering. There's a lack of connection. And whenever you see Jesus coming in, you begin to see the human experiencing healing and transformation at all levels. Zacchaeus is cut off. He's separate. And whenever you're cut off or you're separate, there's always this element of pain and hurt. And Jesus moves and he begins to address the emotional suffering. He addresses it. If anyone needs salvation to come to his house, it's Zacchaeus, the one who is pure and innocent, but anything but. Jesus says, you're Zacchaeus, you're pure and innocent. I sat with that this week. Wait a minute. Zacchaeus means pure and innocent. I remember something Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 8. He said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And you know what's interesting? The pure one, goes to see Jesus, but what actually happens is that Jesus sees him instead. It turns. I'm coming to see you, but what happens is that Jesus actually sees him. They're both seeing each other. There's something really amazing going on here. There's an amazement, a connection, some sort of energy going back and forth. Blessed are the pure, the innocent, for they will see God. He's seen God in the flesh, the one who's going to touch him and heal him. And instead of being met with condemnation and disgust, what is he met with? Love, grace, invitation. No condemnation, but invitation. That is what he has received. It is so liberating. It's what pulls him forward, this invitation to be the person that God has created him to be. Salvation is here. Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to stay with you. I'm with you. Now, how do we know that change is beginning to happen with Zacchaeus? Well, if you look at verse 8, what does it say? Zacchaeus stood up. Now, that's really cool. What does that mean? He comes down the tree, and then he stands up? No, something happened in between there that we still don't know what happened. But all we know is that Zacchaeus stood up. And whenever it says he stood up in the scriptures, that means that this person is getting ready to move into action. He's getting ready to do something. So he stands up. That means I'm going to own my stuff. I'm admitting what I've done. I've confessed everything. I'm owning it. And now I'm going to move forward. And I'm going to do what I can to put things back into the right. He gives half of his money to the poor. And to those he cheated, he says, you will get four times back the amount that I've taken from you. Now, this isn't a sermon about if you give half your money away and four times the amount of all those that you've cheated, then you're saved. That's not what this is about. This is about a healing happening at an emotional level of separation. And what Zacchaeus is doing, in my opinion, is he's opening up the possibility for there to be forgiveness, reconciliation, trust, and a welcome back into right relationships with other people. Now, will reconciliation happen? We don't know. The text doesn't tell us. Will reconciliation happen if you open yourself up and move in that direction in the relationships that you know need to be reconciled? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Will trust be reestablished in those relationships? I don't know. All I know is that Zacchaeus is moving in that direction. And God makes the first move towards Zacchaeus, and now Zacchaeus is making the move towards the community to reconcile with people. And in my opinion, when we tell people what they are not, it doesn't work. Doesn't work. It's not how you set a heart free to open them up. But when you help people see who they really are, what I have witnessed is transformation begins to happen. They begin to see who they are, who they've been created to be in God's image, pure and innocent, and whatever it may be. Someone who's pure and innocent is going to see God. There's a connection that happens, so much so that God himself invites this pure and innocent one into his heart. And when God shows up, all kinds of things are going to happen. All kinds of things are going to swirl and change. Our hearts are going to open up, and we're going to begin to expand and give. And we're not going to help but be generous. It's just going to happen. We can't help it. It's just going to flow out of us. When we're admitting our own stuff and saying, yep, I own that, but I'm not going to feel condemned by it because he doesn't condemn me. He's invited me to be the person that I am. So I can stand here and admit that stuff and own that part of me, but then I'm also going to move out and reconcile and change and move back into right relationship with people because I am a changed individual. So I'm going to stand up. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to put things back into the right if possible. I'm going to move out into the world and be the person that God created me to be. And then Jesus makes this amazing statement. He says, this man too is a son of Abraham. Like, what? You're a son of Abraham. That declaration right there is enormous because he's letting everyone know, this guy who cheated you, lied to you, betrayed you, guess what? He's reconcile and change and move back into right relationship with people because I am a changed individual. So I'm going to stand up. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to put things back into the right if possible. I'm going to move out into the world and be the person that stand up, and I'm going to put things back into the right if possible. I'm going to move out into the world and community. Will you rejoice when that one who was lost is now found? Will you come to the party? Will you celebrate when that one who was lost is found? And what I love about Zacchaeus' actions here is that he's opening himself up to the possibility of connecting with people again. He's opening himself up. Jesus has said, this is who they say you are. This is what you're telling yourself. That's not what I say. You've lost the plot, my friend. You're not what you do. You're not defined by what you do or accomplish in this life or what has been done to you. That just simply tells a story. But who you are is pure and innocent. You're a son. You're a daughter of the Most High God. Live into that. The invitation is given to all of us. And it is our desire here at Edgewater Church in Pittsburgh, California, to offer this to you as well, to help you remember who you really are. I want you to connect to your life. I want you to connect not just to one another, but I also want you to feel a sense of connection to you, that you're okay. You're still here, still moving forward. I want you to hear the invitation to life, that Jesus is going to bring you along in the process, and that we here are going to help you discover who you are in Christ Jesus. No condemnation, only invitation. That's what we're about, and that's what we want you to hear this morning. So, the table is prepared for you this morning. Feel disconnected, and I don't know at what level or what relationship, but there's a sense that you feel that, and there's stuff going on inside of you right now. My encouragement to you would be to talk to me, because if we don't talk and we don't dialogue, we're never going to find our way back. So we have to talk. God gave us words as a gift to be able to talk, ask questions, explore. It's our only way back, is if we talk together, kind of open ourselves up to be vulnerable. There's safety here. You are not going to receive condemnation from me. I've heard it all already. Nothing really surprises me anymore, unfortunately. But I've heard it, and you're welcome here to talk. We want to help you process the things going on inside of you, not just here on Sunday mornings, but throughout the week. We're for you, and we're not against you. God is for you, and he's not against you. So go with that assurance this morning. And now, may the Lord God bless you, and may he keep you. May he cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. And may he lift up his countenance upon you and give you his shalom. Grace and peace be with you, my friends. Thank you.